Maine's past, embedded beneath us. The very ground we're standing on here in Maine is old, very old. Embedded in it, Earth's history. Maine's rocks tell a story that might be a billion years old, because so much has happened here. Tectonic plates crashing, an ocean surging and subsiding, underwater volcanoes, the Ice Age. Maine's geology is varied and rich. Perhaps you've noticed the difference in shape and color of coastal rock formations, or wondered why Katahdin seems so different than the western Maine mountains. Or perhaps you've always had your eye on a beautiful Maine gem and wondered how it was created. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we will learn about Maine's geologic history, its gems, and its mountains. This program is part of our year-long focus on Maine history in connection with Maine's bicentennial. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Anyone who has hiked up a mountain in Maine or visited the coastline has seen evidence of Maine's fascinating geology. Today, we'll learn about the geological history of Maine, and we'll hear about what interesting rocks, gems, minerals, and fossils you can find here. This show is part of our ongoing coverage of topics relating to Maine's bicentennial. My guest, Bob Marvini, he is Maine's state geologist, and William Skip Simmons, research director for the Maine Mineral and Gem Museum, which just opened in December, and emeritus professor of mineralogy at the University of New Orleans. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about rocks you've seen when you're out and about? Have you ever wanted to search for gems or fossils in Maine? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Repeating that number because it is indeed a different number than the phone number to call for our radio pledge drive. Welcome to both of you, Bob and Skip. It's so exciting to have you here. And Bob, I'm going to have you start with the impossible. Give us one of those super quick histories of the land in Maine. What do we know about how old the earth beneath us is and how it got to be where and how it is?
Well, great. Thanks for the opportunity. And as you noted in the intro, Maine's geology records almost a billion years of Earth history. And actually, in some places, it might be as much as almost 2 billion years of Earth history. So that's a lot to summarize, even if I were to talk for the whole hour, which I won't do.
I know it's impossible. How about some highlights?
Sure. Well, so the rocks record the closing of an ancient ocean basin and then the opening of the modern-day Atlantic Ocean. And these are processes that take tens of millions of years. But there's lots of evidence for these kinds of activities that we now know are related to plate tectonics, the fact that the crust of the Earth is composed of these enormous mobile plates, and where they interact, where they collide, that's where mountains are built, that's where earthquakes occur, that's where volcanic activity happens. So we can see that evidence in Maine rocks. And probably the height of Appalachian mountain building was around 400 million years ago in Maine. And we had mountains probably that rivaled the Rocky Mountains in terms of height and grandeur. But then we, for the last 400 million years, have experienced mostly erosion that have eroded down those mountains. And in fact, on a lot of the landscape where we walk today, we are walking on what was the roots of these enormous mountains back 400 million years ago.
Bob, is it oversimplifying it to say that we had these giant mountains and then the Ice Age pushed all those rocks into other places, and that's what we're stepping on today?
Well, it certainly the glaciers were kind of the final episode of erosion and probably nature's most efficient episode, erosion agent, and The glaciers that began about 2 million years ago, multiple episodes had a profound impact on the landscape, further erosion, all that material going out into the Gulf of Maine. And the glaciers also scoured out the lakes that are so important to Maine's environment and communities today. So and left behind sand and gravel deposits that are important to our economy, important water resources. So this all has had a profound impact on our daily lives, actually.
I want to talk about a map that I posted onto our Facebook page, and I know it'll be on our webpage as well. It's a map that you created in 2002. It's called Simplified Bedrock Geologic Map of Maine. But what strikes me, Bob, is that when I look at that, it is so colorful, and there's so many different kinds of bedrock in Maine. If I were to look at a map of another state, if I were to look at a map of Wisconsin or Kansas or Arizona, would it be as varied and as have so many different kinds of bedrock as Maine, or are we unusual?
Well, we're a lot like the rest of New England, but very different from the Midwestern states. I think Wisconsin, we would share a lot of common types of geology, but Kansas is part of the mid-continent where today most of the materials at the surface are deposited in flat layers. So you could drill down with a well or a drill and go through multiple layers and then go some tens of miles away and you'd go through that same sequence. So it's more like a layer cake geology. And while Maine's geology, parts of it may have begun that way, it's experienced so much more in terms of geologic processes that now it's all those layers are folded and truncated and faulted into this complex pattern that is on that map that we produced back in 2002.
All right. I want to bring you into the conversation, Skip. You know so much, and you're a consultant with the Maine Gem and Mineral Museum, the brand new museum in the Western Maine Mountains in Bethel. And I want to ask about tourmaline. I'm going to ask about other gems as well, but this is the gem that Maine is famous for. How old is tourmaline? Where does it come from? How is it formed?
Well, most of the tourmaline in Maine is associated with a type of rock that we call pegmatite, which is a type of coarse-grained granite, actually. The crystals are very large. And the distinguishing feature of those kinds of deposits is they contain many unusual elements. And tourmaline is a mineral that's made up of aluminum and boron and silicon and a few other elements that are variable from place to place. And these elements, especially the boron and the lithium, are concentrated in pegmatites. So pegmatites are the types of rocks in which we find, especially the gem types of tourmaline. There are other types of tourmaline that are not of much importance in the gem industry that are found in other rocks. But what's so famous in Maine are these deposits that contain these beautiful crystals of pink and green tourmaline. And that's what the collectors are after and the gem cutters are after. And that's where they are associated.
It's interesting because we're talking about gems, but mining in Maine is a really large part of Maine's history. And it's not just tourmaline. People have looked for other minerals as well. Tell me a little bit about Maine's mining history and what minerals have been valued the most over the years.
Well, in terms of gem materials, we have aquamarine, we have many different varieties of quartz, smoky quartz, amethyst, and pink quartz. And these have been found all over Maine. The history of mining goes back into about 1820 when the first tourmaline was discovered in Maine. And there have been many deposits that have been mined since then and are still being mined today. That's one of the reasons I'm here, is because there's still a lot of active mining going on. But there are other mines as well, and there's, of course, the The granite industry is a mining industry that is very important in Maine, where the rock is quarried for dimension stone, and there have been an older history of iron mining in some areas, and even some copper mines. But what's going on today and is related to the mining of gemstones and quartz and feldspar. So feldspar preceded the tourmaline in many places, but then tourmaline became the product that most people were interested in.
All right. Well, we're talking about Maine's geologic history. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a quick email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. I'm going to go to Ellery, who's calling from Waterville, because Ellery, I think your question is related to what Skip and I were just talking about. Go ahead.
Yes, it is. I've heard the names tourmaline and pegmatite often in rocks and minerals, but I'm curious, why does Maine, I understand California also has, but what makes Maine rock? Why do we have these pegmatite formations?
Well, these types of pegmatites are enriched in lithium and cesium and tantalum, and they constitute a type of pegmatite we call LCT, and those are associated with the melting of sedimentary packages. So when the supercontinent Pangaea was formed, and Bob was talking about that a few minutes ago, when these two land masses came together, there was a lot of compression and uplift and mountain building, and in the roots of those mountains there was melting, and those sedimentary packages melted and formed igneous bodies and batches of melt. And from those batches of melt and from the igneous bodies, it's possible for rocks to crystallize and produce concentrations of the elements that are necessary for tourmaline, mainly lithium, boron, and aluminum, along with silicon and a few other things. The tourmaline's got a very complicated formula. So the essence of the answer to your question is that it requires melting of a sedimentary package to produce these types of pegmatites. And where we have continent-continent collision, we have the possibility of making pegmatites, but we have to have a sedimentary package that has the elements that we need to end up with in the pegmatites before that can happen. And that doesn't happen just everywhere. So we were very lucky that here in Maine we had precursor rocks or parent rocks that had the right chemistry, and then during the metamorphism we developed the right temperatures and pressures where these minerals came together and formed pegmatites and then the tourmaline. So that's the story we're trying to unravel with our research on pegmatites. It's a very interesting and complicated, but very interesting story.
Ellery, thanks for your question. I'll turn to you, Bob. Is this about 400 million years ago, we think?
Right, and some of those, by dating, we know that they're even younger, to perhaps in the mid-200 million years ago, still pretty old. But while we're talking about pegmatites, I'd like to point out that we are working with the museum and with the USGS this summer on a project to try to better assess the lithium resources in those western Maine mountains, of which tourmaline and the other pegmatite minerals are an important component. And of course, lithium is very important right now for renewable energy projects, for electric vehicles, for all our mobile devices that use lithium batteries. So this is an important project that we're engaged with this summer and next to try and get a better handle on whether some areas of the Western Mountains may have a resource that can be used for these purposes.
Is it that we don't know if it has lithium, but we believe the conditions may be right for it?
We know that there's lithium there. There's plenty of lithium-rich minerals. What we don't know is the extent of those mineral deposits, and that's what we're trying to focus on this summer and next.
interesting, as you're talking about the Western Maine Mountains, Bob, I'm back at that map, and I notice that that is the area that has the most colors of all.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, on that map, there's a lot of the striped, the long stripes that go across the state are the former sedimentary rocks that were formed in an ocean basin that have now been squeezed up as the continents collided and closed that basin. And then there's blobby pink and orange colors that represent the granite intrusions that Skip was referring to that partially have led to the formation of these pegmatites in western Maine. And the big pink part in the southwestern, that on this map we labeled that as the Sebago granite. It's a around Sebago Lake, it's a very significant rock body, very consistent granite. In up towards Bethel, it becomes more irregular and more cut in with sections of the metamorphic rocks. And so we don't have really good information on the distribution of those different rock types in that area. So that's one thing we're looking at. And then just the origin and how to prospect for these lithium-rich pegmatites is the other aspect we're looking at.
So much to learn and so much yet to learn. So many calls coming in. The phone number, if you'd like to talk about geology in Maine, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We are going to take a quick break for our summer pledge drive. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions. Encore.eco. By Maine Media, offering film, photo, and college-level classes online in real time. Committed to being ready for you this fall. And by Bristol Seafood's North Atlantic Shrimp, caught in the wild and available ready to eat in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
Summer membership drive here at Maine Public Radio. Great to have you along this afternoon while we take this short message during a wonderfully interesting Maine Calling. And I'm Mark Vogelsang along with Scott Marshaldon. Delighted to have you join us. When you make a pledge of support right now by saying going to mainepublic.org or making a phone call at 1-800-866-1475, you're supporting this kind of quality journalism, this kind of quality conversation, and these connections that we make and learn more about the place that we call home. Scott Marshaldon with me. Scott, our Vice President for Development. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Mark, it's good to be here. And, you know, while we were off air, we got a great gift in from George Campbell Jr., increasing his evergreen gift, $100 a month, joining the Beacon Society group. He said he'd like a note sent to Jennifer Rooks saying that he is increasing his evergreen to Beacon amount because of her, because of the work our entire Maine Calling team is doing. Thank you, George, for your support. And it's folks like George that allow Maine Calling and allow us as a station to do the work that we need to do.
This is tremendous. And hello, George, a real philanthropic leader in our greater Portland community here in Maine. And we're delighted that you've decided to send that message to Jen Rooks and the Maine Calling team. You never know what you'll discover when you listen to Maine Public because you value learning. Please support that financially. We're always delighted when we hear from friends and close allies of Maine Public, but we also want to hear from you wherever you are, far away, nearby, and this connecting point of public radio connecting us from far north to far south, far east to far west. This is your NPR news station. We're hoping you're counting on it and hope you appreciate Maine Calling today. Here's the number to call and make a gift.
1-800-866-1475. Once again, 1-800-866-1475. Online at mainepublic.org. Share your support with Maine Public. Allow us to grow and thrive into the future. Like one of our new colleagues did, David Chow, all the way from Seattle, Washington. David's here with his family, his third day on the job. He's a fourth day on the job, David, grizzled veteran now. We were talking off air that he's a real teacher learner, and he's supporting Maine Public Radio and had supported his station out in Seattle because of that and because that content. You need that content, ongoing content, to allow him, he and himself, to grow. And he found that when he was talking with folks out there in Seattle, a lot of times their conversations would revolve around public broadcasting or something they heard on NPR.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And exactly. Doesn't that happen to all of us? We're informed, we're educated, we're delighted in many cases by the content that we hear, by what we learn. It sparks in us the very best. And it's your support, it's donor support that makes that all possible. You can share your support by calling 1-800-866-1475.
Scott, I love the fact that this is a shared experience. We share the values of public radio, public television, public media, online. We tell our friends, and as you, David, thank you for your gift, we tell everyone that it's a common denominator when we engage in the community that we engage in. It informs us, it helps us, it also makes us, frankly, better citizens. And that's a lofty goal, but the idea that public broadcasting can provide a more informed citizenry through great journalism, independent news, programming that matters and is substantive, not trivial, and it's a great place of beauty and a place where we can appreciate great art as well. So for all those reasons, there's an opportunity right now, today, right at this moment, for you to make a pledge of support. Think about a gift of $30 a month, $20 a month, $10 a month, $50 a month, whatever works for your budget. Large or small, your gift will matter because it counts toward the overall effort to make sure that public radio and public broadcasting remain strong here in Maine. Here's that number to call.
1-800-866-1475. Again, 1-800-866-1475. Join the over 1,000 people that have 1,000 households in Maine and across our country that have called in sharing their support with Maine Public Radio, standing with Maine Public Radio at this time when we need as many friends, frankly, as we can get.
That's right, Scott. Journalism is under assault. The truth is sometimes played with fast and loose with the facts. And we know that here in public radio, I heard an interview last night with Terry Gross and Jeffrey Toobin about how important journalism is today. You know that deep down in your bones. And if you appreciate it right now, whether you want to make a one-time gift or a monthly gift, do your part to make sure public radio and this radio station remains strong and healthy. You can do it by going online at mainpublic.org. See all the gifts that we have to offer. A couple of tote bags we'd love to send you. But do your part at 1-800-866-1475.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about the geologic makeup of Maine. Joining me, mineralogist and gemologist Skip Simmons and Maine State geologist Bob Marvini. As always, we want to hear from you. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I have to mention our wonderful videographer and editor, Rebecca Conley, did a video out at the Maine Mineral and Gem Museum back before COVID hit, and that is on our Facebook page, and we'll link it to our webpage as well. So if you'd like to see some of these gems that we're talking about, you can go and see that video right now, or maybe wait till after the program. But Skip, let me ask you, with COVID, what is going on there? Is the museum open?
Yes, we opened up about 3 weeks ago, and we're open, and we are having quite a number of visitors come through. Of course, we're practicing safety, and everyone is asked to wear a mask, and we keep social distancing. But we have marked the floors in the museum so people can get through there without being too close to each other. And we have a lot of interactive digital exhibits that are connected to computers. And in the beginning, those were intended to be used by hand, but now we have special styluses that we give people, and so they can use these interactive digital displays. We have about 20 of them on the exhibits, and then those styluses are cleansed and disinfected so that they can be used again, and people don't have to touch things with their hands. So, yes, we're open, we hope people will come by and see some of these things we're talking about.
Wonderful. Amber Whitaker on Facebook says, "Hi, Bob. Listening with my phone while mapping bedrock for the Maine Geological Survey." So I thought that was fun. We'll go to Dave, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Yes. I had a question about a friend of mine lives on Vinyl Haven. Took me out to a place called, locals call Brimstone, where all the black rocks were jet black.
Sure. So, yeah, Vinyl Haven has a fantastic geologic history. There was an enormous volcano there back, 400 million years ago. And the brimstone rocks are part of the rocks that made up the magma chamber, the deep roots of this volcano. And that's probably the rock type that we would call gabbro, and it's similar to granite, except that it has less quartz in it, and it's darker. But it's kind of the darker, denser material that solidified out of this magma chamber at the same time as this volcanic enormous volcano was formed and erupting. So it's really fascinating how much of that geology is so well exposed on Vinyl Haven and some of the other outer islands. We love mapping along the coast. My staff who wrote in, Amber, she's in the Willywag somewhere in the woods with trying to scrounge around to find some bedrock outcrops.
Oh, my gosh. Dave, thanks so much for the question. And speaking of the coast, I want to ask you this, Bob. I was walking recently in Fort Williams and Cape Elizabeth, and I noticed what appeared to my untrained eye like a big thread of quartz in what otherwise seemed like a granite rock. What was that and what caused it?
That's probably a dike of, it may even be pegmatite. Those are common in many areas along the coast. So it's a late intrusion into a fracture, granite-like material that was molten and moved up through the crust through these fractures after a lot of heat and pressure had already changed these sedimentary rocks into hard metamorphic rocks that are common along that part of the coast. So these features are very common, and they're often pretty straight lines just cutting right across the rock layers.
So that was where a rock was cracked, and then later something was pushed up into the crack?
Right.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting. And was the rock on the outside, was that at some point in our ancient history of an underwater volcano?
Well, there are places where we have volcanic rocks like that. In Cape Elizabeth area, these are mostly sediments. So this was sand and mud in an ancient ocean basin that accumulated over millions of years, and then through continental collision were squeezed up and turned on edge into these hard metamorphic rocks. But there are places in Vinyl Haven we can see some of those volcanic rocks were submarine volcanic rocks. A lot of places along the coast, mid-coast, we can find features in the rock that indicate to us as geologists that, hey, this was erupting under the water, which is really fascinating. And we can find those types of rocks all the way up to northern Maine as well. So more evidence that Maine was covered by, a significant ocean basin hundreds of millions of years ago.
Mm. We'll go to Jeannie calling from Saco. Hi, Jeannie. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much for this show. And I wanted to say I'm a sustaining member, and I encourage everybody, you're an evergreen member, and I hope everybody else will too. I know you're doing your pledge drive. So I got into amateur geology 12 or 13 years ago when I was living in Edinburgh, Scotland, and it's just really changed my life. Just makes every place I go so much more fascinating. I hope one of you will update the Roadside Geology of Maine book, because I just find that isn't really accessible for somebody who's not trained as a scientist. But I have two really quick questions. One is, what explains the things on Tulalip State Park that look almost like petrified trees? I love that geology, but I don't know what creates that. And second, if I were going to plan a geology-oriented, maybe 1 week to 10-day trip around Maine, what are the places that you would say I have to go to?
Thanks. All right, well, Skip, I suspect you're going to suggest you start in Bethel.
Well, of course, you can come here in Bethel and go through the museum and learn all about the history and the history of mining. And we have all kinds of gems and minerals on display that you can see firsthand. And we have many books with guides to places in Maine that you can collect. And so this part of Western Maine would be a great place to start a geologic adventure in Maine. But I'm sure Bob has some other interesting
sure.
sites that he'd like to mention too.
Go ahead,
Bob. Absolutely. Sure. The islands, you know, Mount Desert Island, spectacular geology, well exposed. I already talked about Vinyl Haven. Go to Mount Katahdin. I mean, that's a huge granite body there, and it's spectacular scenery. And I want to point out that on our web pages, we have a portal we call Geologic Facts and Localities that anyone can wander around the whole state of Maine, and we have over 200 sites where we've described some details of the geology. Most of them are easily publicly accessible, and so that's a big, if you're planning a trip, that's a great place to start planning. But getting back to two lights, a lot of people look at those rocks and think it's petrified wood, but it really isn't. It's those rocks are metamorphic rocks, and it's the complexity of structures that formed in the rocks due to heat and compression that have formed features that look a lot like, you know, the fabric in trees, if you cut them lengthwise, the way the rings look, that's the way those rocks look. But it's all from geological processes. There is no petrified wood there, and I think there's probably no petrified. Well, there's some wood preserved in glacial deposits, but not truly petrified. So. But Two Lights is another great place to look at the geology.
All right. Well, guess what? We have to take another quick break. When we come back, some more answers to the many questions coming in for Bob and Skip. This is Maine Calling. We're talking geology. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Jane and Frank Bragg of Bangor, proud supporters of the voices of independent and in-depth journalism at Maine Public News, and by Marshall Communications with its new ebook, 10 Tips for How Small Businesses Can Beat COVID-19 with Empathy and Action, marshallpr.com.
And you're listening to Maine Public Radio News. I'm Mark Vogelzang, CEO, with Scott Marshallton, who's our head of development, and we're asking you to do something important today as we're listening to this fascinating discussion about geology and Jen's guest, as always, uncovering, literally, interesting things today. And so we're so glad you're joining us. If you'd like to make a pledge of support to keep this kind of quality journalism and conversation going, we're so glad that you can do that right now by calling 1-800-866-1475 or online, a secure online pledge at mainpublic.org. Scott Marshallton, there's lots of good reasons to make a pledge of support right now.
Well, we're listening to one of them, Mark, and that's Maine Calling and the work of Jen Rooks, Cindy Hahn, Jonathan Smith, and all of our entire team who are producing this show, talking about Maine geology, a very unique state, a very rich state. And, you know, where else but Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Broadcasting, can you hear a show like this about Maine, by Mainers? And it's your support that funds this program. It's your support that allows us to have a show like this on now. And you can help by calling 1-800-866-1475.
And I want to thank everybody who's donated so far to this public radio station. There's still time, of course, to support your NPR, your public radio news station right now. Independent journalism is not something that we should take for granted. And the conversations that we're having here on Maine Calling are also not something we should take for granted. A station like this connects you with the community. It connects you with interesting people that you might not know about. And it prompts your own conversations and your own thoughts and curiosity. I want to just rewind the clock a moment and go back in the calendar to 10 years ago. And at that point, there was no Maine Calling on the air. I'll repeat that. Maine Calling was not on radio at this point. It was a new program that came about in 2009, and we started with just a day or two a week. And it's grown because your listener support has grown. So we have ambitions to do more, not just for ambition's sake, but to do more for the people of Maine, to connect people with each other. So you can see the progression in this history of Maine Calling. This program has survived and thrived because of listener support. We want to do more with your help right now.
1-800-866-1475 again. 1-800-866-1475, online at mainepublic.org. Mark, I know that Jennifer and the team, during the initial COVID crisis in March, doubled down the number of shows. Takes a ton of production, but they felt that it was the right thing to do at the right time. Maine and our citizens were, and myself as an individual, we all were interested in learning more about what was going on. We needed to learn more about what was going on, whether we wear a mask, we don't, you know, how can this virus be transmitted? We needed more information, and Maine Public and Maine Calling was there to provide that information.
When you make a call or when you go online at mainepublic.org, we're going to ask you if you'd like to become an Evergreen friend. And you might say, well, what's an Evergreen friend? The fact is, it's a very simple, sustaining monthly donor to this organization. Many nonprofit folks contribute on a monthly basis. Maybe you contribute to organizations on a monthly basis, and it's that easy for you. But the important thing as well is that Maine Public Radio can then count on you on a month-in and month-out basis, and it becomes a really important planning tool, and it makes it an efficient source of revenue for this public radio station as your NPR station in Maine. We can do it easily when you call in. You can make a gift of $15 or $25. We mentioned earlier a dollar a month, a dollar a day for a month, $35 a day a month. But it's easy, and when that happens, you can sign up either on a monthly basis with a credit card or electronic funds transfer. You can make a one-time gift as well. But the important thing is we'd love to hear from you today, right now, during Maine Calling. Scott?
1-800-866-1475. And Mark, you know, if folks decide they want to make a $42 gift a month right now, that qualifies them for a Maine Public Sea Bag, a special one-off produced for this pledge drive by our friends from Sea Bags, who are also supporters of Maine Public Broadcasting, Maine Public Radio, and they want to help us incentivize folks to share in the love of Maine Public. So again, for a one-time gift of $500 or for a $42 a month gift, give us a call now at 1-800-866-1475. Thanks so much for your support.
Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. And today's topic, tracing the geology of Maine. So many questions, so little time. I'm going to try to get through as many as possible. Before we do so, though, I want to ask you, Skip, about at the museum, the Maine Gem and Mineral Museum in Bethel. I understand most of the exhibits are dedicated to the state of Maine, but that you have the largest moon rock in the U.S. What does a moon rock have to do with the state of Maine?
Well, we have an incredible collection of meteorites that were given to us by our founder, Larry Stifler. He had a collection that was just the greatest collection of almost any individual person in the world. So we're very fortunate to have it. So what it does for our museum is it enables us to put the whole context of the solar system together with the history of the Earth, and of course then that leads into the history of geology of Maine. So it's an extension of what we're doing studying Maine, but we're just very fortunate to have this. We have the largest piece of the Mars on Earth here in our museum, and we have the second and third largest pieces as well. In fact, we have more moon rock than NASA brought back from the Apollo missions. Not only that, we have one of their oldest rocks in the solar system, a meteorite that's been dated as over 4.5 billion years old, and we have the largest piece of asteroid Vesta. So that's a real bonus for people that visit our museum to get a chance to see these incredible objects. And we have this unbelievable piece of what's known as a palisite meteorite, which is metal and stones, and it has gem quality olivine or peridot crystals in it, and it's this huge big piece, and it's really phenomenal to see. So I encourage everybody to realize that they're going to get to have quite a bonus when they come to visit our museum and see the main samples. Also to see these extraterrestrial space rocks.
Skip, what I love is that we all kind of need some perspective right now, and I suspect seeing a rock that's 4.5 billion years old can provide a little bit of that. We're going to go to Greg calling from North Yarmouth. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a kind of a basic geology question. I understand that all the rocks along the coast were laid down in that early sea, so they're marine deposits. But they've all gotten so solidified and metamorphosed, and I just can't imagine things being in the bottom of a shallow ocean getting deep enough to the pressure to solidify them and then raised up again. And that's the whole process of that I find bewildering.
Bob?
Sure. Well, that's a really good question. Thanks for that. The process of plate tectonics, the large continental plates moving around and ocean basins, the ocean basin, the crust gets consumed at places that we call subduction zones, and that's where there are a lot of volcanoes, like in Alaska and in Japan. But the oceans get consumed in that way, and then large continental land masses collide. So it's not just the weight of sediment layers upon layers in the ocean that results in the metamorphism. It's this collision that actually produces large mountains. It's like taking two cars and slamming them together, and the front ends get crumpled up really high, and that's exactly the situation here, that the leading edges of these continents collided and formed large mountains, and it's the weight and heat that was generated in that process that metamorphosed the rocks and made the sediments into these solid, hard rocks that are exposed in so many places in Maine today.
Hmm. We'll go to Keith, who's calling from Hollowell. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm a practicing geologist of Maine. I know Bob very well. I haven't met Skip yet, but I'm sure I will. I wanted to make a point about, in the event that pegmatites are actually mined for lithium or other valuable metals like that, it's completely different than the sulfidic metals mining that so many people in Maine are afraid of. When you have copper and zinc and gold and silver, there's often sulfides, and they create leachate, and that's what pollutes water. Pegmatites don't have any of that. They're essentially inert. So when people hear about mining pegmatites, it's a completely different ball of wax compared to mining metals. So I just wanted to make that point.
Keith, thanks for calling and adding your voice to the conversation. We're going to move on to David, who's calling from South Trescott near Lubeck. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a really curious and beautiful outcropping. I live on a pretty remote coast on the Bold Coast, and it's these columns of like 6-7 sided columns that are exposed on the beach. They look like columnar basalt. I've never seen them anywhere else in Maine. I have seen them in Iceland. Could your guests talk about the commonality of these formations and why they form the way they do, and do they predate all the glacial scouring of our coastline? They're quite amazing.
Bob?
Yeah, so I think you described them well. They are columnar basalts. There are places in Maine on the coast, and there's some areas in Baxter Park that have similar columnar features, and that's the columns form as the lava cools, and it's just it's just the physics of cooling that reduces the volume and forms these cracks in very characteristic hexagonal columns, and it's exactly like the rocks in Iceland and Scotland and other parts of the world where large sheets of lava flowed out on the surface. And they certainly do predate all of the glacial scouring. These are hundreds of millions of years old compared to glaciation, which was initiated about 2 million years ago.
David, thanks for your question. We're going to move on to Freya calling from Freeport. Hi, Freya. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about the sand at Winslow Park, which is a park in South Freeport, and my kids and I go there a lot. Earlier this summer, my son brought a magnet with him. It was just in his pocket, and when he pulled it out, I found that there's little bits of black sand on the beach in Winslow Park that's magnetic, and I was curious what that was.
Ooh, good question. Bob, do you know?
It's most probably magnetite. It's pretty common that beach sands will have a small component of magnetite and other minerals, garnet in particular, and in some places it gets by the wave action up near the top of the beach to form a dark or pink layer that has a concentration of magnetite, some other dark minerals, and garnet.
All right, we're going to go to Peter calling from Lubeck. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, about the museum in Bethel, I was there last year, and I know it wasn't ready for prime time at that point, but it's very impressive, and I learned a lot. And one of the things I was kind of looking at, especially with respect to the 19th century mining that went on in Maine, you know, the co-location of silver mines with what might have been just deemed trashy mineral deposits of no value but could in fact be rare earth, you know, is that, you know, a common variable in the search for rare earth or other, you know, valuable minerals today, that they might be, you know, in quite close proximity to those old silver mines?
Skip.
Well, that's not typically where we find the concentrations of rare earth elements. They're more commonly associated with a type of rock that is formed from extension. And most of the rocks here in Maine are compressional. So I would have to say I don't think that there are concentrations of that. But Bob may know better the details on that than I do. I haven't been to that location. Bob?
Well, No, nor have I, but you're right that rare earth elements are not, we wouldn't expect to find a lot of that in the geology of the Ain, just because of the nature of it. Yep.
Okay, I'm going to try to squeeze in a couple more calls as quickly as I can. John in Camden, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm an architect, and when I did a house on the inner harbor of Rockport, I was standing down on the shore with a code officer, and he pointed to some very curvilinear bedrock there and said, this is where the continent split apart, because the only other place in the world where this rock exists is in, like, Scotland, Ireland, England. And I've wondered ever since if there's any truth to that.
Sure. Bob, is that true?
There's some truth to it. We certainly share a lot of geology with the British Isles, no question about it. And a lot of that geology came to be during the large continental collision that formed the Appalachian Mountains. And then the Atlantic Ocean opened and rifted those and scattered pieces around the North Atlantic. So there is a lot of commonality, right?
Great, great. Trying to squeeze in one more call going to Ricky in Rockland. Hi, Ricky. Go ahead.
Hi. I'll jump right to the point. My name is Ricky. I'm from Rockland. And the other day, my friend Rocky and I were out rock hounding, and he said something that I've never really taken for granted, which is that amateur rock hounding can have a negative effect on ecosystems. Is that true, or is it not something you really have to worry about?
Skip, is amateur rock hounding okay?
I think it's great. I think it's a really great thing to do, and I encourage people to do it. And it's how I got my start in geology. And, you know, as long as you don't destroy a lot of natural features when you're doing your rock hounding, and there are certainly places where you don't want to dig holes or remove stuff. But in general, individuals going out doing rock hounding are okay for the environment.
That's oh, my gosh. It breaks my heart that this show is over. We have so many more questions. We're going to have both of you back.
Okay.
So Aaron on Facebook wants to mention Bob, Maine's Ice Age Trail. So hopefully we can find a link to that. And I just want to thank both of you so much for being on Maine Calling today. William Skip Simmons, Research Director for the Maine Mineral and Gem Museum, Emeritus Professor of Mineralogy at the University of New Orleans, and Bob Marvini, Maine's State geologist. Sandra Harris ran the board today. This program will be on the air again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Kahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
And you were listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. My name's Scott Marshall, and I'm Vice President and Chief Development Officer here with our CEO, Mark Vogelzang. And Mark, what a fantastic show. To no surprise, Jennifer couldn't get all the questions and all the callers in, because that's the type of programming, the type of show that we have on Maine Calling. And I'm kind of excited to hear a little bit more about Maine geology in the future. And it's your support, it's donor support, and we've said it and we'll say it again, that makes that possible by calling 1-800-866-1475.
This kind of show is exactly what public radio does so exceptionally well. Conversations with interesting people connecting you to the community. When you call right now, you're going to be able to support this program. Because you appreciate this program, we're asking you to make a call tonight, right now. Call today, call this evening, call anytime. Make your call at 1-800-866-1475. And, of course, we have a secure online where you can go pledge right to the front of the line with a pledge at mainpublic.org. Great programming, and of course it's wonderful to hear from all of our listeners who have already pledged. If we haven't heard from you yet today, we'd love to hear from you, and you can pledge at any level, whether it's $5, $50, $500, or $5,000. Every pledge counts when we're all together here trying to make public radio stronger and healthier.
All gifts are generous. You decide what is right for you. by calling 1-800-866-1475. As Mark said, you can go online at mainpublic.org, get right to the front of the line, and help support public broadcasting, help support quality programming. And Mark, we've been very fortunate. We were talking earlier about the evolution of Maine Calling, and it's
right.
Donors, it's callers, it's our audience members that have continued to support this show and have enabled it to grow. And that is so critical, because I can't imagine not having Maine Calling on the air.
That's right. And there's more that we'd like to do on your behalf. Donors are asking us to do more for Maine Public during this, for the public, for the community that we all serve during this difficult time. And public radio, public television, public media online has been enormously important in connecting the state during this time of COVID and this pandemic. 1-800-866-1475, online at mainpublic.org. You're in good company, Scott, when our friends make contributions, whether it's a first-time gift or you're renewing your gift with an Evergreen friend on a monthly basis. Over 70% of the funding comes from the community, from over 50,000 households. So you are in absolute good company. Your gift matters, and here's the number you can do to call and make that gift known.
1-800-866-1475. Again, 1-800-866-1475, or online at mainpublic.org.
You're listening to WMEF in Fort Kennett, 106.5, WMEW Waterville, 91.3, WMED Callis, 89.7, WMEM Presque Isle, 106.1, WMEP Camden at 90.5, WMEA Portland, 90.1, and WMEH Bangor, 90.9.